Members of the Electoral College convene at their state houses next week to cast their votes for the next president and vice president of the United States. In most cases, if Donald Trump won an elector's state, the elector votes for Donald Trump.
But Harvard Law professor Lawrence Lessig is urging electors to vote their conscience and offering legal representation to electors who decide to vote for someone other than the candidate who won their state.
About a week ago, there were reports of about 7 electors considering that move. Today, the number has reportedly more than doubled, but it's still short of the number that would be needed to change the election outcome.
Lawrence Lessig joins us now. He's a professor of law and leadership at Harvard Law School. He's also co-founder of the Electors Trust, a group that offers free legal counsel to any elector in the Electoral College who wants to vote for someone other than the candidate who won their state. Lawrence, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
So first of all, can you please give us a quick lesson on how the Electoral College works? Who are the electors, first of all?
Well, the Constitution says the states have the right to select the electors, but the electors themselves are federal officials, as Justice Jackson described them in the Supreme Court's most important case, describing their power, a case called Ray versus Blair. And as federal officials, federal officers, as he called them, what they have is a constitutional right not to be restricted by the state, telling them they have a legal obligation to vote one way or the other. As Justice Jackson wrote, no one faithful to our history can deny the plan originally contemplated. The electors would be free agents to exercise an independent and nonpartisan judgment as to the men best qualified for the nation's highest office. But what the state can do is create a moral obligation. The state can say, we can't force you, but we can ask you to make a promise. And the question the electors have to decide is whether there's any moral reason sufficiently strong to justify them breaking the moral obligation they have to vote for the candidate that they've been pledged to.
So are there different requirements depending on what state that they are representing?
Well, basically all states except two, Nebraska and Maine, allocate electors on a winner-take-all basis that says the candidate that wins the most votes in the states gets all of the electors. And the way that those electors get divided or appointed or settled on is different in different states. So sometimes they're on the ballot, sometimes they're not. Sometimes it's two slates of candidates, sometimes it's just selected. But the really important differences are differences about the state trying to say, if you don't vote how you've promised, we will fine you. Some states say that. That's plainly unconstitutional. Some states say that you have to show us your ballot so that we can make sure that you're voting as you've promised. That also is inconsistent with the Constitution's requirement, basically, that this be by secret ballot. So states have lots of ways they try to invade the constitutional right of the elector. And what we've done is we've said we're willing to defend the right of an elector to make the judgment whether he or she will exercise a vote of conscience as opposed to voting how he or she has pledged.
And what actually happens when the electors cast their votes? Where are they and how is it done?
Well, the framers were very keen to make sure the electors could not be manipulated or coerced by some central force. So they said the electors have to meet in their separate state capitals. So every capital will be visited by these electors on Monday, and they will all cast their ballots at basically the same time. So, you know, in 1792 is the first election. They never thought that there would be any way to coordinate across 50 or across the 13 states as there were then. But now, of course, we have Twitter and we have Skype and we have lots of ways that they could communicate. But still, it's the same structure. And when they vote, their votes are they're supposed to be. We think the constitutional scheme is that they vote by secret ballot, and then the ballots are open. They determine how the votes in the states have been cast.
So how often have electors in the past gone against how they were supposed to or expected to vote?
Well, in 9 of the last 17 presidential elections, you've had electors who voted against how they've pledged. It's never mattered in the presidential elections, although it did matter pretty interestingly in the vice presidential election. It's basically the same structure for the vice presidential election. But in 1836, Virginia's delegates refused to vote for Vice President Johnson, because Vice President Johnson was alleged to have African American as a lover. So they refused to endorse him as vice president. And so that meant their votes were withheld, and he didn't get the majority vote that he needed in the Electoral College, and it had to go to the Senate, and the Senate had to decide whether he would be vice president or not, and they finally decided he would be.
We're talking right now with Lawrence Lessig. He is a professor of law and leadership at Harvard Law School and co-founder of the Electors Trust, a group that offers free legal counsel to any elector in the Electoral College who wants to vote for someone other than the candidate who won their state. So this has been a very unusual election and post-election period. What is it about this year that has inspired you to really reach out to those electors who you think may be thinking of not voting the way that they are expected to?
Well, this is really an unprecedented presidential election. There's never been a presidential election where there is so much groundswell to call for the electors to exercise their independent judgment. And there are a number of reasons for that, I think. One big reason is, once again, we have an election where the person who won the majority, and not just a slight majority, as in 2000, but a very significant majority, probably in the end will be about 3 million votes, is not, if the electors vote in their normal way, going to be nominated as president. And that troubles many people because the scheme that we've fixed on now presumptively says that, the person who gets the most votes wins. But it turns out it doesn't, and not because of the Constitution. This is something people miss. It's because of the way states allocate the votes. If this winner-take-all system didn't exist, if you just divided the votes on the basis of the proportion that each candidate got, then the chances of having this kind of inverted election, where the winner of the popular vote does not win the election, would reduce substantially. So it's because of the state rules that we have this problem. And that creates a certain frustration because I think a lot of people in the majority think, being in the majority should matter. But more than that, I think that many Republican electors are looking at a couple very significant facts about Donald Trump that gives them great pause. So Richard Painter, who's a Republican, George Bush's ethics czar, has been quite vocal about Donald Trump's refusal to divest himself of his foreign assets. And that's going to create an obvious conflict under the Constitution's foreign bribery clause. The framers were very afraid that a president would have assets or interest in foreign countries and then be controllable by those foreign countries because the king or the government in those foreign countries would give him benefits that might lead him not to be concerned about the interests of America enough. And indeed, if you remember, at the beginning of the presidential campaign, Donald Trump made this point very strongly when he was criticizing other candidates running for the Republican nominee. He's basically trying to attack Jeb Bush, but he said, how can we trust that Jeb Bush will do what is in the public interest if all the time he's thinking about what his super PAC, who has given him $1 million, wants him to do? And that was a great point he made, because super PACs do have that dynamic. But if you're worried about a super PAC, you should be worried 1,000 times more about a president who has $300 million loan from Deutsche Bank or has hundreds of millions of dollars in loans from Chinese banks. How can he sit there and negotiate with the Germans or the Chinese and think about the American interest exclusively if in the back of his head he's worried what will happen because of these banks holding my loans? Or the same thing with his assets, Trump Towers Trump properties that might be held overseas. So this is a very serious constitutional problem. And as Richard Painter says, unless he's willing to divest himself, then an elector cannot, in good faith, in good conscience, vote for a man who is in violation, plain violation of the Constitution. And the second thing that's troubling many electors is this whole discovery about the Russian involvement in our elections. First of all, this again was exactly what the framers were worried about. They thought foreign involvement inside of our government would make it impossible for us to govern ourselves. And here you've got a really extraordinary effort by a government to intervene, and confirmed by our security forces now, intelligence security forces. And indeed, after the election, the Russians were quite open about their connection to the Trump campaign. And I think many people are saying, in a context where you can imagine the Chinese doing the same thing, the Pakistanis doing the same, anybody engaging in the same kind of intervention, we've got to become zero tolerant of foreign governments trying to intervene in our elections. And if you benefit from it, and you knowingly benefit from it, then you shouldn't get rewarded for that by getting the nomination or the confirmation as president.
Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Lessig is with us to talk about the Electors Trust, a group he co-founded offering pro bono legal representation to Republican electors who decide to vote for someone other than the candidate who won their state.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you support a Republican elector who votes for someone other than Donald Trump? Should an elector vote their conscience or abide by the outcome in his or her state? What do you think about the function and the existence of the Electoral College? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Lessig is with us to talk about the Electors Trust. That's a group he co-founded offering pro bono legal representation to electors who decide to vote for someone other than the candidate who won their state.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Should electors go with their state's outcome, or should they vote their conscience? Should they be evaluating the qualifications of the president they're expected to vote for? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we do have some callers who want to join the conversation, so let's go first to Jerry in Waterford. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an independent, so I have voted both Democratic and Republican in various elections. And I've always supported the candidate who has won, but I've never voted for anarchy. And what this gentleman's talking about today is going to be anarchy if the electors do not follow what people have voted for. They had 6,000 people, I understand, from the paper over there for Donald Trump. Can you imagine what those people are going to do if the elector doesn't follow what he's supposed to, what he's pledged to do? And you also mentioned about the fact that the interference by a foreign government in the United States election, I'm sure you know back in 1996 that the United States funneled $10.2 billion to Yeltsin in the election there in Russia, and that was instrumental in him winning that election.
All right. Thanks for that call, Jerry. And let's let Lawrence Lessig respond to that. So, Jerry, concerned about if this actually happens, what it would mean for the country and stability.
Well, first, he also said something very important about interference in foreign elections. And I think that's wrong, too. And especially in the age of cyber attacks, if we don't draw a clear line and live up to it ourselves, we're going to be incredibly vulnerable to the games that these hackers are playing. And so I think we need to be very clear and very strong about that. You know, as to whether there would be anarchy, I believe in the Constitution. I believe in what the Constitution structures and establishes. And what's clear, again, as Jackson said, is that these electors were to be free agents exercising independent judgment. Now, what that means is when they make a pledge, they better have a very good reason for deviating from that pledge. If they don't have a good reason, they shouldn't do it. It would be wrong for them to do it. And what we're actually not in the business of persuading anybody one way or the other. I think this is a judgment for the electors. But what we're doing is making clear to the electors that they are free to make that judgment, and we'll protect them if, in fact, they get attacked legally, by making their judgment according to their conscience. That's what the Constitution imagines. You don't like that? Then let's amend the Constitution. Let's get rid of the Electoral College. Let's just have an automatic system, allocates points state by state, and then that's who decides the election. But that's not what the framers wanted. They wanted them to deliberate and decide, and that's our constitution, and we should respect it. And if you don't respect it, I think that's anarchy. That's violating the principle that we've inherited from our forefathers.
Let's go back to the phones, and Frank in Burlington is next. Hi, Frank.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I look at the 2.6 million U.S. citizens who did not vote for the Donald, and my concern is, you know, I liked the last caller's question about anarchy, but how can, well, first off, how are you, sir, contacting the electors and giving them this support and really good encouragement? And then, two, as a citizen, how can I contact the electors to also let them know of my concern towards and offer them my support for voting what's best for the country and what the 2.6 million Americans voted for?
Thanks for that call, Frank. And Lawrence, how are you actually reaching out to those electors?
Well, there's actually three different groups who are doing basically what we're doing. We're the least aggressive. So our group basically has, if you go to our website, electorstrust.org, there's a way for electors to reach out to our lawyers. They don't talk to me because it's very important we maintain perfect confidentiality, so they have a attorney-client relationship with our lawyers, and they only talk to their lawyers. There's another group called Hamilton Electors who have reached out. They've gone out and they've begun to speak to the electors directly. And then there's a Republican group led by a Boston Republican lawyer, a person I've known for a while, a very respected lawyer named R.J. Lyman. And he himself has gone lector to lector calling them and talking to them. And again, he doesn't persuade. He's not saying don't vote for Donald Trump. He's saying here's what the framers meant you to do. And you should exercise your conscience. You should exercise your judgment. And you decide whether you can vote according to how you're pledged. So he's actually identified, as he reported on a show that I was on with him two nights ago, 17 electors himself who have not promised not to vote against Donald Trump, but who have expressed to him that they're seriously considering it. And what we know is, if they don't get close to 37, I imagine most of these will just vote for Donald Trump because they don't want to get into the trouble of having stepped out. But there will be some who, regardless of the number, will step out. Now, there have also been a lot of creative people trying to find out how, create ways to reach the electors. There's a site called makedemocracymatter.org, which actually gives you a direct way to contact them. But these electors have been so overwhelmed with people reaching out to them. And I feel so sorry for them at this moment because it is a very difficult decision. They are doing an important service for our country. And, I would say that at this point they know. They know the issues and they know what they need to do. And I think what they have to do is go to church on Sunday and think very carefully about what they're going to do, or their synagogue on Saturday, and then on Monday make their decision. And I trust that they will take the role that the framers expected them to take.
So let's do a hypothetical here, Lawrence. The numbers of electors that would need to defect hits 37, and so then Donald Trump doesn't have his 270 electoral votes. What would happen then?
Well, then the top three candidates would be immediately sent to the House of Representatives, and the House of Representatives would start taking ballots, and they would vote one vote per state. Which is itself kind of extraordinary, so that means that Rhode Island gets as much power in this as California does, but that's the constitutional system. And they would vote until one of the candidates gets a majority of the votes. Now, the Republicans have an overwhelming majority in state delegations, except there are a number of states where, the number that turns a majority is just one representative or two representatives. So it's pretty clear there would most likely be a Republican. It could be Donald Trump. But many people think that at that point, what the House would think is that they need to elect a candidate who could begin to unite a very divided nation. And so it wouldn't be Hillary Clinton. It wouldn't be Donald Trump. It could be someone standing between. And that opportunity, I think, is making a lot of people think, what's the best way to get us through this if, in fact, it gets into the House of Representatives?
Has Donald Trump made any comments related to your efforts and those of the other two groups working on this?
Well, quite extraordinarily, Donald Trump has basically threatened the electors, which is extraordinary because it's, in fact, a federal crime to threaten electors. The statute explicitly says you can't coerce or threaten federal presidential electors. But it's, you know, this is, I think, of all the mistakes Donald Trump has made about the Constitution and about the law, the most understandable, because most people think of the electors as just cogs in a wheel, whose job is basically just to reflect what the vote has done. And that's just because, for most of the time, that's how they've acted. But once you begin to really understand what the framers meant, why they created them the way they did, and you read Hamilton in Federalist 68, and you talk about the kind of person they were trying to make sure the electors would have a chance to stop, you realize that these are actual people who are supposed to exercise real judgment, and that judgment should be respected, and you shouldn't threaten somebody, you shouldn't bribe somebody, you shouldn't do anything. You should let them make their judgment just like you allow a juror to make a judgment or you allow a representative to make a judgment.
And in just the minute that we have left, Lawrence, do you think that the Electoral College is an institution that we should be keeping, or do you think we should be going to a completely different system?
I think we should abolish the winner-take-all part of the Electoral College. I think we should have a system that's as close to one person, one vote as possible. But I think this election has convinced me that I'm not actually sure it's a bad thing to have a kind of final check, you know, a kind of emergency break process. You know, and 56 times in our history, the electors have met and they've not pulled that emergency break. But it's probably not a terrible thing that they're able to pull it if, in fact, it's necessary. And that's the...
Lawrence, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Lawrence Lessig is professor of law and leadership at Harvard Law School. He's the co-founder of the Electors Trust, a group that offers legal counsel to electors who are considering changing their votes.